산티베트 담아요. 감사. 선생님. 간대지를 쓰그랬으나 가고 싶어 하십니까? 다 담보 남바이 마시고 해. 아니지. 그래. 남바세리. 아니. 잠도 예매기 전에. 다 남바이 메기 잡아 줘. 다 두담에 다 뒤에도 다 남바산이 두담에 감사. 선생님. 간대지 고하시나. 가고 싶어 하시네. 다와까대기 차지시켜야 봤습니다.
So in the last lesson, we looked at what or who is a proponent of Buddhist tenets. Yeah. So a person who propounds Buddhist tenets is firstly a Buddhist. And as we have discussed, essentially, whether someone is a Buddhist or not is determined by whether that person accepts the three jewels as their objects of refuge. Okay? So a person who propounds Buddhist tenets is firstly a Buddhist. And on top of that, he accepts the four seals. Yeah? And the four seals are the four things that attest a particular teaching or doctrine to be Buddhist. Yeah. Okay. So yeah. So essentially, these are the two features of that constitutes a person who propounds Buddhist tenets.
What teacher? Ani that number three, to the my kansala, ani meta kandi yasena that chadamo doja ba samjamba ta umabas ta tosine ta.
So, how many types of proponents of Buddhist tenets are there? So, there are four. Yeah. What are the four? The proponents of the Great Exposition. The proponents of sutra. So, okay, the proponents of great exposition in Sanskrit, we call them the Vaibhashika. Then the proponents of sutra, the Sautantrikas. Then the proponents of mind only, the Chittamatrans. And the proponents of the middle way, the Madhyamikas. Yeah. So there are four kinds of proponents of Buddhist tenets, and this number is exhaustive, it's definite. There's only four, not more than four. Okay?
Tuxine. Tuxido, that, and a number sign of Tudama, Shigalo, that she was a shed, so Jumlendi. Do it just Tane, and Rotting Shaguare, Chataman of the Devasina, Colotum with Jesu Tane, and it to the Maguare. 아니 지다 우마바도스는 콜로파의 제수 당시 두다마에 섬점을 차셔나 콜로템의 제수 당시 두다마에 던다이니 다 장마로다 알선하다 선제 좀된 대기 제수 당시 두다마에 시작이어요.
So these are the four divisions of proponents of Buddhist tenets. Yeah, are all followers of Buddha. So as mentioned in the previous lesson. The proponents of the Great Exposition and the proponents of Sutra are followers of the first, the followers of the turning of the first wheel of Dharma. Yeah. The proponents of the middle way are followers of the second turning of the wheel of Dharma, whilst the proponents of mind only are followers of the third turning of the wheel of Dharma.
어떻게 같은 애마 가서 베제테레 가서 치다마에 녹시해봐라 진이 되고 다시 한번 여기 또 주중에 또 남해가 또 상을 남시 시해봐 또 또 서제 뉴네 신발에
Okay, so on page 2 of the root text, you know, in this root text, the explanation of the Great Exposition School. is given in seven outlines. Okay, first, looking at the definition of what a proponent of the Great Exposition School is, and then second, the divisions. Number three, the etymology. Number four, their way of asserting objects. Number five, their way of asserting object possesses. Number six, their way of asserting selflessness. And then lastly, their presentation of the grounds and paths.
所以，
the definition of a proponent of the Great Exposition is, you can see in the text, right? It's a person propounding lesser vehicle tenets or the Hinayana tenets who does not assert self-cognizers or self-knowers. Yeah, that's another translation. Yeah. So the proponent is of a Great Exposition is a person propounding Hinayana tenets who does not assert self-knowers, but does assert truly existent external objects. Well, so in the in the study of in the traditional study of Buddhist philosophy, the study of mind and awarenesses, lorik, is usually done before the study of tenets. So this is why the tenets or module comes after the lorik module, isn't it? Because in the lorik module, in the module on the mind and awarenesses, one would have studied different kinds of minds, such as self-cognizers or self-knowers, isn't it, right? So on the basis of having that understanding, then if one looks at this definition, then it's not so difficult, right? But if you are looking at this subject without the prior study, if you're having prior any prior understanding of Lorik, then of course then it'll be more challenging, lah.
所以，
here the proponents of the Great Exposition, they do not assert self-cognizers or self-knowers. But then the proponents of the Sutra School and the proponents of mind only assert self-knowers. Yeah. Okay. So as we've covered in the previous module, as you know, when we talk about consciousnesses or minds, we can look in terms of other knowers and self-knowers, isn't it, right? So according to those who assert self-knowers or self-cognizers, so within one collection of consciousness, yeah, so consciousness is that which is clear and knowing. So within one collection of one consciousness, there's a part of the consciousness that knows an object other than itself. And then there's another part which knows itself. So that's the other knower and the self knower respectively. So take for instance an eye consciousness apprehending blue. Yeah. So within the collection of this eye consciousness apprehending blue, there is a part of that mind that is aware, knows itself. Yeah. So, but then there's also another part to which, you know, the object blue is appearing clearly, and this eye consciousness is cognizant of the object blue. Yeah. So that part isn't called the self other knower. Yeah. But the proponents of the Great Exposition do not assert self knowers. Essentially, they do not assert that the consciousness, you know, has that ability, you know, to see itself clearly. Yeah. So as you know, the self knower is that which has an aspect, that which aspect of the apprehender, isn't it? That's the definition of self knower, aspect of apprehender. So the proponents of Great Exposition do not assert self knowers or self cognizers. Yeah. So I would think that that this is quite easy to understand for those who have studied Lorik in the previous module. So in short, yeah, the proponents of Great Exposition the assert that consciousnesses are only other knowers. Consciousnesses do not have the aspect, you know, they are able to look at them, look at an aspect that look at consciousness itself, you know, clearly. And a proponent of Great Exposition is someone who asserts truly existent external objects. Yeah, so they assert external objects, but they assert that external objects are truly existent. Okay. So what do we mean by external object? So an external object is an object that which is a coarse object that is formed through the aggregation of subtle of atoms and particles, yeah, which are subtle, yeah. So a coarse object is an aggregation of many subtle particles coming, then forming and a coarse object which is then suitable to be apprehended by sense power, and therefore is the condition for the production of a sense consciousness apprehending it. Yeah.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
Boleh? So there's an external object, and therefore an external object exists before the consciousness apprehending, before the consciousness that apprehending can be generated. Yeah. You understand? You see the point? So the proponents of great exposition asserts external objects to exist. They are external objects, and on top of that, they assert that external objects are truly existent. So the proponents of great exposition asserts that external objects are truly existent because for them anything that exists, you know, has a substance about it, and there is something right there existing independently, you know, as a substance right there, you know. It's nothing to do with, you know, the mind imputing, you know. So, and also because they cannot, they don't know how to, you know, explain or assert, you know, a position whereby, you know, the mind plays a part in the existence of the object. But for them, you know, everything is, there's a substance right there, independent, you know. So for them, things are truly existent. So for the proponents of great exposition, they are not able to explain, you know, or not able to posit, you know, that that there's a part about phenomena that is imputed by consciousness. You know. Rather, for them, you know, if the thing exists, it is truly existent in the sense that it's right there. You know, there's a substance. There's something there. There's something right there, independent. You know, yeah. So in this, you could call it substance, yeah, but what it means is there's something right there, and there's a basis right there. Yeah. So therefore, in the Great Exposition School, for them, everything that exists is necessarily substantially existent. You know, necessarily substantially existent. Yeah. It's one of their philosophy. Yeah. Okay? Somewhere there. Somewhere. It's somewhere inside. Yeah. Sounds familiar. So if these couple of distinguishing features exist, then that makes that particular the person, you know, in question a proponent of great exposition. So essentially, if there's a person who does not assert self-cognizance but asserts truly existent external objects and is a proponent of Hinayana tenets, that makes him a proponent of great exposition.
tiya kaso ta tinde shi ta chi tam nam san she do ka ko le na rang ri ta che da ma wa se di ta ma rang ri bi da ba se chi ko do su chi den de ba chi ko do chi den de de ma do ba chi se ko do su ta tiya ka na san te mi du do ma wa te jin do do ma ni na te mi du do ma chi ko do su ta tinde shi shi la sha se tam bo ta sa no ta na shi tinde chi nya pa le ta lo do su ko go ya re so su
So, of course, it's not possible to understand everything at once, you know. But you have to memorize the definition. Because if you don't memorize the definition, there's nothing for you to hold on to. There's nothing for you to think about, you know. You know. So for now, if you're able to say, oh, what, who on earth is a proponent of whatever great exposition school? You just have to know that whether you understand self-knower or not, you just think that he does not believe in self-knowers. He believes they are external stuff, you know, external objects, you know, in the way they are described. And then these external objects are real, truly existent. And then, by the way, he's also a Hinayanist. Oh, no, I cannot say that. He's a proponent of Hinayana tenets. Okay? So, if you can remember this, I think that's enough for now. Then you have, you know, then we work on that basis. You have to remember this, no choice, yeah.
Okay.
See, on the basis of being able to at least, you know, say, you know, or regurgitate, you know, these couple of points, then of course, on the basis of having this information in your brain, then naturally, after a while, the question will arise, like, what's a self-knower? What is a self-cognizer? Then you start to wonder, oh, what is this? And what is an external object, you know? And then invite in, and also what is truly existent, you know? And then, yeah? And then, yeah.
What did they say? 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 What did they say?
Then you become clearer and clearer as we go along, as you start to think about stuff, yeah. But right from the beginning, the basis for you to be clear about what a proponent of great exposition school is having memorized the definition, yeah, without which there's no basis to learn and understand, yeah, really. So when the proponents of great expositions are divided, then there are three, the division is made mainly because of geographical location, yeah. Proponents of great exposition from Kashmir, proponents of great exposition from the western region, and proponents of the great exposition from the central region. Next, the etymology, or basically, why are they called the proponents of great, or why are they called, in this case, proponents of particulars? Chedama was literally, Cheda is a proponents of, literally, it's proponents of particulars. Yeah. So they are called such because they propound tenets following this particular text called the Great Exposition of Particulars. Or, alternatively, they are called proponents of particulars because they propound the three times to be particulars of substances.
Zeshabeta, don't know about dead and say, then you're doing real.
So there's a set of teachings or texts called the seven knowledges. Yeah, there's a set of seven knowledges. They were composed primarily by the Arhats and Shariputra and Moggallana. Yeah. So these seven are not the actual the speech of Buddha. Yeah, but composed by the Buddha's main chief disciples. Yeah, but the proponents of the great exposition accept or take these teachings. Yeah, to be Buddha's teachings. Yeah. So this text that is mentioned here in the etymology, the great exposition of particulars, this is essentially a commentary on the set of seven teachings composed by the Buddha's great disciples such as Sariputra and Moggallana. Yeah. So this text, the great exposition of particulars, is essentially a commentary to those teachings. Yeah. Okay, and it is said that this particular text is huge. Yeah.
Composed of 100,000 verses.
Then later in time, the Vasubandhu condensed the essential meaning or points of this text, the great exposition of particulars, and then whereby he came up with the treasury of knowledge, the Abhidhamma Kosha. So here we are looking at the etymology, you know, why they are called proponents of particulars. Literally, they are called the proponents of particulars. Yeah. So one explanation is that because they are followers, you know, of this huge text called the Great Exposition of Particulars. Yeah. Right? Is there in the table? Is there in the root text, yeah? Alternatively, okay. It doesn't sound right in English, but anyway, it's one kind of English. Alternatively, they are called proponents of particulars. We were just talking about etymology only, okay? They are so called because they propound the three times to be particulars of substances. It's a bit tricky. Particulars of substances.
Neba,
skinny jigba
jigba neba jigba skinny jigsum che cha jin gura ba de jig che tam jela ba ta de ganga la ta ta da tesum gi chare yum de shi ba tesum gi cha sha tu be shi
so as you know composed phenomena have the factors of production, abiding, and disintegration. Okay? Composed phenomena have these factors of production, abiding, and disintegration. Yeah. And for the proponents of the Great Exposition, these three factors can be related to the three times.
어떻게 다 대순가로 아니 다 대순가로 다 언제서다 다던다 제레 다 제기치 네 다던다 네 제기치라 세시 다던다
So for the proponents of Great Exposition, the three times are instances or particulars of substance. Yeah.
어떻게 다 빼나 빼자는 데는 송다 빼나 가서래 아 빼나 뒤잖아 저 거대 보시도 빼나 다 쓰레기 빼나 쓰레기 넣어도 쉬어 봐이나 쓰레기 넣어도 쉬어 봐이나 깝도 쉬어 봐이나 다지 아니 코파 교화 조인 누가라 나때 양치 속도 면도 없어서 다 니고 이나마 다 다리로 써 봐이나 다 코 뭐 주도 말했어 답변은 당복값으로 가 이제 달리샤 이제 다 양 가서 온다 구르고 쓰고 있나 봐 다 값이 달리샤 구르고 쓰고 있나 쓰기 시디 쓰러 봐 다 그 무엇이 규도야지 다 당복 내가 입에 내가 수면 내가로 무엇이 매도가 샤러 봐 이제 그 제 다 쓰기 제디 다 균진이 왜 돼야지 다 돈다 이 제 쓰디 다 교화 마찬가지 같은 이유 왜 돼야지 다 돈다
So, just to give an example, yeah, to understand how the three times are particulars of substances. Yeah. So imagine you have a golden vessel. Yeah. I mean, essentially it's gold. Yeah. So you can be a cup, it's a golden cup. Then you melt the gold, you melt it, and then you transform it into a plate. And then later on, you can melt it again, and you do whatever you need, and you fashion it into a statue. Yeah. So as the golden cup becomes a golden plate, its entity has changed, yeah, isn't it? Yeah, it's not a plate, and it's not a cup anymore. It becomes a plate. Yeah. And then when you change it into melt it and become and fashion it into a statue, then its entity has also changed. Yeah. It's become a statue instead of a plate. But while they have, this golden thing undergoes transformation, while its entity is changed, but the fact that it being gold doesn't change. Yeah, the substance, it being gold, hasn't changed. Right? So let's take a sprout here. A past sprout, a present sprout, and a future sprout. The sprout in these three times are a different change, isn't it? The past sprout is not a present sprout, the present sprout is not a future sprout, right? But the sprout of the past and present and future are sprouts. It being a substance, that has not changed. Yeah. So, for example, if you talk about a future sprout is posited, you know, at the time of the seed, isn't it? At the time of the seed, then you deposit the future sprout, isn't it? Future sprout.
되고. 아, 도신. 다 드네마 아니지. 다 다야 초신 이거 게임 누가라? 다 이거 게임에 내가 들라. 다 다 다다왔습니다. 다디 다 이거 다다왔지. 내가도 죽으러 왔다.
When the sprout first arises, yeah. That is what we call the present sprout, 되고. Right?
다 드네마 이거 틀래. 다 다지고 미치. 아니지. 다 아니 뭐 자동 저거 자동 저 사도 가나 다 누구 연말로 와 저거 저거 민도 가나 다고 누구도 연말로 와 그 누구 대바세 이제 저기도 와
다도 나가. And then when that sprout, you know, matures and becomes a tree and bears fruit, the sprout has ceased to exist, yeah, isn't it? Yeah, so that's the past sprout. At the time of the result, there's no the time of the fruit, there's no sprout left, yeah.
근데 삼대는 걸었다 니고 마음 봐 니고 다다 니고 대바 수가나 다 모르게 그랬지 이나야 그 제디 아니 유튜브 말했어 다 제 두고 말했어 다 대답이 뭐 제디 아니 두고 말했어 시다
돈다 so you know if you think about what is in what I've just explained what is a past sprout present sprout and future sprout the entity has changed its nature entity has changed but it the substance of it being a sprout hasn't yet. Substance of sprout is there, yeah. There's something there, right? So the substance sprout exists in both the past, present, and future, or the asset. Let's say, for instance, a small, a young girl. Yeah. You could say that she is a future mother. Yeah. And then when in the future when she does conceive, then she becomes a mother. Yeah? And then when she passes away from this life, then she is a past mother.
Oh, 도시네. 다 텐데니 다 거 가르쳐 갔다. 다 제딩이 다 두수면 내가 뒤에 대시 숨겨. 다 목화가 그래 되네요. 그 제딩이 두수면 내가 막 다 본다. 누구 제딩이 대배 두수여 가래. 다시 시간하시는 마음배 두수여 가래. 다다배 두수여 가래. 다가나시다. 그 제딩
So just like the sprout which exists in the past, present, and future, the substance sprout. So in this case, in the example, the substance mother exists also in the past, and in the present, and in the future. So somebody who propounds that the three times are particulars of substances is a proponent of, it's called a proponent of particulars.
Generally. Mm-hmm.
So, as for the way of asserting objects, according to this school, the definition of a thing, is that which is able to perform a function. And according to them, thing, existent, and object of knowledge are synonymous or mutually inclusive. This is the Great Exhibition School's presentation, which is different from what we saw in the previous module, right? It's different, huh? Okay, so according to them, so there are two types of things, permanent things and impermanent things. An example of permanent things are uncompounded space, analytical cessations, and non-analytical cessations. Examples of impermanent things are created phenomena or products. It's a different way of translating created phenomena or then your products and impermanent phenomena. Okay. Okay, so we're not going to this here in class, but those of you who have an interest to know a little bit more about the Great Expositions School of their idea of what constitutes the reality, then you can do it on your own, maybe on privately in discussion or in the Sunday class, you know. Those who wish, you can do that on your own. Okay, so for those of you who did the previous module, I don't think there's much to say about this. Yeah, we've done, of course there's some slight differences, right? But generally, we've covered there. And those of you who are new, if you want to learn, then, you can do it privately. So another way of dividing things is into conventional truths and ultimate truths. So according to the Great Exposition School, the definition of a conventional truth is a phenomenon such that an awareness apprehending it is cancelled if it is broken up or mentally separated into its individual parts. Illustrations of conventional truths in this context are, for example, a vase and a woolen cloth. Why? Because if a vase is broken with a hammer, the mind apprehending it is cancelled. And if a wooden cloth is separated into its individual threads, the mind apprehending the wooden cloth is cancelled. Sounds good, yeah? That's what we think.
That
So according to this school, a vase is an illustration of conventional truth. Yeah. Because if the vase is smashed with a hammer, then the valid cognizer apprehending vase ceases to exist. Because when we conceive of a vase, we're basically conceiving in terms of its shape, isn't it? It looks like a vase, yeah. So if somebody comes along and smashes that vase, it's gone, and the mind, which thinks of this vase, is cancelled, yeah. Ceases, no? Vale? We can try it with your iPad.
Let's try it with my
one. Luckily, I didn't bring it down. Clever. I only bring it down when we talk about the emptiness. Yeah, we see for ourselves. If we do something, when we talk about illustration of a conventional truth, if we do something like that, that's the mind. is the mind cancelled or not? Yeah. Interesting.
So, ti ro diksha sin ta tanda ti ge dube dangi ji chage yo re ro ba bun be chu di ti de sam ta no ala bun be chu do sha no ala ani ji dang de le ta bun be ti sin ba ji se ani ji bun be ro ma bun be chu ro chi ta ti de shi lo ti de sin do ka na chu ji me chama di ani do tra shi do dai ro ti sun be sa
그 짐이 세 마디 더 해라.
취짐이 세 마디. 맨날 출하지 않아. 맨날 쓰더라. 분바당 지난
취도. 취지당으로 와. 그럼 취기.
분배당 취심으로 와. 또 분배당 취심으로. 분초스 또 분배 취디. 아니 그 바 너의 소수 세도 가라. 배디사 또 맨날 라떤 맨날 시대 분배 취디. 또 너의 소수 세도 가라. 분배 취심 두지기도 공부 시작으로 와. 다사 주 매동 시체 아니 다 소리 티 소리 자 소리 다 시험도 다 되지기도 못해 다 분배 소 분배 말 분배 취 티로 백자 또 세 누가나 또 소소 세 누가나 다 취지면 참아 독도 하시다
So then another example which is a little bit more subtle. Has to do with looking at the water in a vessel, in a cup, in a vase. Yeah. So, according to Buddhist philosophy, water is an example. Basically, it's an aggregation of eight particles, eight different kinds of particles. Yeah. And this is a Buddhist presentation, their own formulation of what constitutes atomic reality. You have earth particle, water, fire, and wind. Then there are four others, form, smell, taste, and touch. So water is an aggregation of these eight things, eight particles. Yeah. So let's assume, let's say water has this nature, yeah. And if you were to individually, you know, isolate, you know, these different parts of water, or you take away its smell, its taste, its tactility, and so forth, one by one, at the end, you have no water left in your mind. In the mind appearing water is cancelled.
If you can talk about Kunzo, or Tiny Chabashi, Chido, and it's Pombada. Kunzo said, I came to that and that. Pombato is Jomi Dugala, that Pombatim Tama Doctor, that Pombe Chudo, the chest, Pomena Chudo Chasman, Louis Soso Saint, the Zigate, the Queen Sopon, Louis Soso Saint Dugala, Tizim Tama Doctor, that on the Tismas.
So yeah, so these are some of the examples that illustrate, you know, what a conventional truth is. Yeah. So whether it's a vase when it's destroyed by a hammer, or if you mentally isolate, you know, the eight particles that make up water, you know, then the mind apprehending the vase or the mind apprehending the water will cease to exist. Yeah. So for the proponents of Great Exposition, conventional truth is also referred to as conventionally existent, conventionally established, or imputedly existent. So these are different ways, according to this school, there are different ways of saying the same thing. Okay, then the definition of an ultimate truth according to the Great Exposition School is a phenomenon such that an awareness apprehending it is not cancelled if it is broken up or mentally separated into its individual parts. And illustrations of ultimate truths, for example, directionally partless particles, temporarily partless moments of consciousness, and uncompounded phenomena. So according to this school, they assert this directionally partless particles basically refers to, for them, this the smallest possible particle. Yeah. Okay. According to them, this smallest particle, which I think we can say the basic building blocks of matter, and in modern words, yeah. But for them, these particles are directionally partless. And so such a particle, a directionally partless particle, is an ultimate truth. It's smallest evolute of form, smallest possible particle, yeah, basically.
Watati, that under the bodies, that's the Dogala, that Dagalanta, Jumba, Louis, Sosu, Savana, Ranch, Lotrayam, that tended to ten tumors in the Lodi, and a call, Toretan Yamas, that on the Carsina, got Jumada, Louis Sosu, never, never in the Tizim Tamadi, and Torayamas, the Rakot under the bodies.
So for them, these smallest particles are directionally partless, yeah. And such a directionally partless particle, you can't destroy it. You can't do anything to destroy it. There's nothing also you can do to mentally break it up even into something smaller. Yeah, it's the smallest possible. So for them, it is an ultimate truth in this case. Something real. Yeah.
Sheba
So similarly, you know, when we talk about consciousness, there are the temporarily partless moments of consciousness. So the smallest moment, I mean, in terms of time, this is smallest moment of time, the smallest minute moment of time, you know, right? So that also is an ultimate truth, yeah, in this school, for the same reason. As for uncompounded space, yeah. So that would be an illustration of an ultimate truth, yeah. But the reason, perhaps the reason why it is an illustration of ultimate truth is that an uncompounded space is permanent and therefore it doesn't undergo change. Yeah, it doesn't undergo change. So for that reason, then it would fit into the definition of being an ultimate truth. So perhaps, you know, just as the uncompounded space itself does not undergo change, therefore the valid cognizer apprehending uncompounded space will not undergo change as well. Yeah. Right? If it doesn't undergo change, it means it cannot be cancelled, basically, right? That's the point.
But,
So, according to this school, ultimate truth, ultimately existent, ultimately established, and substantially existent, they are
talking about the same thing. Same.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be chakras, 저는 제수 때문에 잡고 냈어요. 근데 제수 때문에 이제 인배 잡고 야말했어요. 그냥 제가 말했어요. 이제 세디 양고 단단한 말 갖고 와야지. 제수 두바 세디 고 담바 두바. 다 랑경원이 두비 시시라다. 제수 두바 세디.
지주는 나 주셔. 지주는 제로. 지주는 지주도 받을 수 있다.
그래서 so according to the Great Exposition School, if it is an established base, which means if it is an existent, it is necessarily substantially existent. I am always mixing up these two. If it is a thing, or basically if it is an existence, if it is an established base, it is necessarily substantially established. That's the thing. So basically all phenomena are necessarily substantially established. But whatever is substantially established is not necessarily substantially existent. Right, substantially existence is related to the ultimate truth, no? So, in general, when we say something is substantially existent, in general, in a lot of contexts, they mean the same thing. But in this particular context, when we are dividing, we are looking at the divisions of established base, the divisions of phenomena. Then, according to this school, they don't mean the same thing. So, although all phenomena are necessarily substantially established, they are not necessarily substantially existent for only ultimate truths. Right?
This one.
뭐래? 우집 우집 아? It's somewhere in the reference book, right? Yeah. Somewhere, I know. I saw it somewhere.
아니 지금 시도나 다시 시도나 시도나 다 대박 주제 잡기요. 지난번에 말하고 시도나 대박 주제 잡장. 전담도 그래서 전담을 주제 잡기요 말이야. 전담도 주제 잡기요 말이야.
Then what do we keep? So according to this school, all phenomena are necessarily truly established. But yet, at the same time, it doesn't mean that everything is necessarily ultimately established. So again, there's a difference here. Then what do
we keep?
Right. Right? Okay. For this school, if it is an established base, it's necessarily truly established. But whatever is truly established is not necessarily ultimately established. Because if something is ultimately established, it is substantially existent, yes. In this case, in this school will be an ultimate truth. Right.
What did they say?
So going back to this school's understanding of conventional truth, yeah. So you know, a vase is a conventional truth, yeah. So the word the word in Tibetan is kunzop, yeah. Of course, in the higher schools we translate as obscurational, but I don't think you can translate obscurational all the time, or you cannot translate it as conventional all the time, depending on the context. You see, the English language doesn't have the flexibility or as the Tibetan language. Yeah. But the word for it, for conventional, is kunzop. And in the different ways of looking at the word kunzop, in this context, you know, the vase, let's say, is a conventional truth. So it is conventional because its existence is dependent on something else. It's aggregation of many factors coming together. And because when everything comes together, then that phenomenon comes into being, you know. And the phenomenon, the correct thing is produced. And therefore, it is true. It is established. It is a truth. So a vase, in this sense, is conventional truth.
What is it? Tena, that's been a certain chemist to come up, go, go young or shaggy, to the chemist, go, chip top of shell at dinner to my kids, this yaku maracon, top of young or shaggy, chemist chipo, shaggy, said the cook, good job, say that on the team we have a din, then say. No, that thing too, has a go, that, tandem de bars, a quaranta, lungs of two, that on the inlet, top, pension, demo was, quaranta.
Whereas a directionally partless particle is not a conventional truth, because a directionally partless particle is the smallest possible particle, and it stands on its own alone without depending on anything else. So that the thing about it depending on something else, you know, is not there. Therefore, it's not conventional. And therefore, there's something real. It's ultimate. You know. It is ultimate. Yeah. Okay. If there's anything that you did not understand and you need clarification, you can bring it up right now. Yeah. we all aspire to be middle proponents of the middle way, right? Mr. Tan, you have a question? Is it?
Hello. Referring to the great exposition definition, it mentions it as asserts truly existent external objects. I'm a little confused that is this truly existent external objects same as inherent existent objects? If not, what are the differences?
Well, in short, it's the same. What the highest school says about things being not truly existent is the very thing that the Great Exposition School says exists. It's real, true existence. So, you know. Wow. Okay. You need a helmet?
I have three parts to my questions.
So is it three questions or three parts of the questions? Okay. Are there instances of the three times as well, right?
Okay, first part is the definition says propounder of the Hinayana tenets.
Yeah.
So what exactly is the Hinayana tenets? Second part is can a Mahayanist actually hold such a view? That's the other part. And the third part is it is said in the consequence medieval school that all the arhats, in order to achieve liberation, actually realize the same emptiness as the Buddhas. That means they actually hold the, I presume now they hold the consequence medieval school when they actually achieve liberation, at the point of liberation. So why is it that it's called Hinayana tenets when eventually all realize the consequence medieval school emptiness?
What's the first question again? Oh, so yeah, what exactly is Hinayana tenet? And number two is what?
What is Hinayana tenet? Number two is, can a Mahayanist actually hold such Hinayana tenet?
Yeah.
And number three is, eventually the arhats also realize consequence in the middle school, right? And so why is this called Hinayana tenet when everybody realize the same emptiness?
Oh, so you're saying there's no great exposition on heart, basically, lah. So there's the Hinayana and Mahayana, isn't it? The literally is the lesser vehicle and the great vehicle, yeah. Okay. As for the person who enters either paths, whether it's a person who has entered the Hinayana path or Mahayana path, both have entered a path. But the difference between these two paths is basically dependent on whether there is bodhicitta in the person's mind or not. Right? So it depends. So there's a difference in terms of the vastness or the scale of the motivation of mind, isn't it? So someone who has bodhicitta is someone who's entered the Mahayana path. Lah. Otherwise, it's someone who's entered the Hinayana path. Tiyo? Hello? Okay?
Okay.
So therefore you have a Hinayanist and a Mahayanist, right? Now the question is Hinayanist and Mahayanist the same as proponents of Hinayana tenets and proponent and Mahayana tenets respectively, are they the same or not? That's the question.
Okay.
So earlier in the lesson, we saw how there are four types of proponents of Buddhist tenets. Yeah. So proponents of the Great Exposition and proponents of Sutra are proponents of Hinayana tenets. Proponents of the mind only and proponents of the middle way are proponents of Mahayana tenets, right? Okay. What do you think? Is there a proponent of the Great Exposition School who has entered the Mahayana path? Yes or no? So if you think about it, there's no reason to say no. It's possible that there is someone who is a proponent of the Great Exposition, which is a Hinayana tenet, but is someone who has entered the Mahayana path.
Anyway,
I was raising some objections anyway. But anyway, of course, it depends on how you argue it, I know. So there are hearer arhats who are proponents of the middle way. Yeah. But also there are hearers arhats who are proponents of mind only. It's possible, yeah. So it's possible to say that there are here are hearts who are proponents of middle way or proponents of mind only, yeah. So you think about this, then you know you can see that a Hinayanist is not necessarily a proponent of Hinayana tenets. Yeah, not necessarily, could be, but not necessarily. Yeah. Likewise, a Mahayanist is not necessarily a proponent of Mahayana tenets.
Rangri donani di do din do deba chagira.
Okay, so all what we have said so far is pretty non-contentious, quite clear. But if we look at what exactly is Hinayana Tenet, what defines a Hinayana Tenet, that something that, you know, needs to think about. Yeah. Can we say that a Hinayana Tenet is a system that believes in truly external, truly existent external objects and not self-knowers? Can it also include, can the system include an assertion of truly existent external objects and self-knowers, which is basically the definition of the sutra school, yeah. So these defining characteristics, when put together, can these defining characteristics be the defining characteristics of what constitutes the Hinayana Tenet? Oh, that's the question. So is there a Mahayanist? Is there someone who's a proponent of the Mahayana tenets and is Hinayana Ahad? Yeah. Right? You think about it? Yes, you could say, right? Proponent of the Mahayana tenets and is a Hinayana Ahad. Yeah, right? One can also say that there is a proponent of Hinayana tenets but who have entered the Mahayana path. Right? So therefore there's a difference, yeah, between the Hinayanis and the proponent of Hinayana tenets, yeah. And so forth. What was number two?
Three parts.
Yeah. Can't remember.
I like to just clarify because we were given this chart on the mode of existence of phenomena, where Ken Rinpoche explained that the difference between truly established and truly existent, and the conventional truth is not truly existent. So going back to the definition of a proponent of the Great Exposition School, he does assert truly existent external object.
Mm-hmm.
In this context, is that referring to an ultimate truth or a conventional truth?
Yeah. You mean the definition?
Yeah, under the definition, asserting truly existent external object, is that referring to an ultimate truth or a conventional truth? Because under this chart, there is no truly existent conventional truth.
So basically
truth.
You're trying to ascertain the pervasion of external objects.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
Right? What? Yeah, external objects only refer to...
In this case, the external object that's being referred to in the definition, is it referring to a conventional truth or an ultimate truth?
Mm-hmm. So external object and can encompass both.
Can be both.
Huh? No, this truly exists. This truly established existence. All phenomena according to this school are truly established, right?
They are truly established, but not truly existent, but the definition is truly existent.
Lupi Vashiduna, Demadubi Kavaram, to be chapsur. Lupi Vashiduna, Demadubi chapsur, to be chapsur.
Demadubi, Demayuba?
Demadubi, Yubi, my chapsur.
Demayumi, my kebra. Anikunzo, Demayumi, my kebra.
It's correct. The chart is correct.
Then look.
In this school, conventional truth, conventionally existent, conventionally established, and imputedly existent or imputed existent means the same thing, mutually inclusive, synonymous. In this school. Okay? Conventional truth, conventionally existent, conventionally established, and imputedly existent. And then ultimate truths, ultimately established, ultimately existent, and substantially existent are same. You mean the translation? In this school, anything that exists, a phenomenon is necessarily truly established. Truly established. Truly established. Technically, literally it is, but somehow in the translation standard, usually Denpa Drup and Denpa Yoba, people translate as truly existent for whatever reason. I don't know why.
Right.
그런 텐이나 말 그런 이 개발체인도 그런 다른 규제.
제가 다지고 놀라는 텐데도 다게 시발 나신데. 지금 제 제스 초바스. 다 초바도 여가 지금 더 집어라. 제 제스 초바스도 야 더다 가가 한번. 지금 여바 초바스는 집어라. 내가 그냥 제가 당에 됐으면 좋죠.
So I mean, the thing is the general convention is that I mean whether it's established or existence, meaning the same thing, yeah. So if something is established, it's existence of course it's established, yeah. And you know when we talk about we always hear the word truly existent, yeah. Truly existent, you know. Even in the teachings and whether the lamas or the translators always say truly existent. But in Tibetan is the word literally is not truly existent, it's truly established. Denpa drup. They don't say Denpa yue, no. But it is translated as truly existent, yeah. And then of course, in the perspective of the higher schools, especially the consequence middle way school, I mean, it's the same, yeah, truly established, truly existent, inherently existent. We're talking about the same thing, and then from the higher school as well, substantially existent, substantially established is the same. No? But in this school, then, of course, one has to make a difference, yeah, because in this school, although everything is substantially established, it doesn't mean that everything is substantially existent. So in this school, there's a difference. So, but as long as you understand the, yeah. So in general, established and existent, it means the same thing. But when affixed to substantial in this context, in this school, then substantially established and substantially existent does not mean the same thing. I think we need a 4 boxes. So, you know, yeah. Yeah. So, sorry?
Okay. Establish it.
Yeah. Okay. If you want to make your life easy, okay, then you know, then you can change the definition, lah. You know, instead of truly existing, you change it to truly established external object, lah. Then, okay. So as long as you know that in this system though there is a difference between truly existent and truly established, then I think we are clear. Yeah. Denpa drup, denpa yue. So in this system, truly existent means ultimate truth, yeah. In this system, truly existent. Truly existent, ultimately established, ultimately existent, ultimate truth, substantially existent. Sama. Yeah. Actually, it's, yeah, I mean, as long as you memorize it, you put them in their respective places, it's okay, it's not confusing. You just have to memorize both bien. So they've. So therefore, you see, in this school, on page 4 of the handout, right, and right at the bottom of the table, and so the, according to the Great Exposition School, conventional truths are not truly existent and they are not ultimately established. Whereas ultimate truths are ultimately established and truly existent, isn't it? Yeah. Then are the two truths truly established for this school? Yes, both are truly established. Then likewise, for this school, both ultimate and conventional truths are established by we are the own character. Both are inherently existent. Both exist by from their own side. The reason why perhaps people are confused because the imprint of the higher school, the consequence middle way school, is too is very strong in the mind. The higher schools, therefore, you know, that's why you know everything is the same. Truly existent, truly established, inherently existent, blah blah blah. The whole works like that. Oh, all the same, yeah, same. Everything is one taste, yeah. So we are proponents of what? Mahayana tenets.
Hello. Okay. Just now there's a statement with regards to Hinayana Arhat's propounding my only school. I have no problem with Hinayana's propounding Mahayana school tenets. But if it's a Arhat, it is a full destroyer. So technically, it would have removed the afflictive obscuration. So does it mean that my only school, proponent of my only school, can also remove afflictive obscuration?
According to who?
You know, in peace of my consequences.
You remember the definition of a tenet or not?